Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning. Welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee. I hope you're all sitting back and enjoying the shorter days of the season. And, of course, but we're always pleased to have you every weekend. And, Doak, how you doing? Good morning.
I'm fine. How you doing?
Are you warm?
No, a little. My feet are still kind of thawing out from yesterday's game. But, anyway,
Michigan State played Ohio State.
Yep.
Yeah, the Big Blue played Rutgers yesterday.
Yep.
And, the nice thing about this time of the year is this football starts going really full throttle.
Yep,
you know, and it's just always, to me, I just enjoy watching it each and every single weekend.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then, of course, I'm laughing. Who we got this afternoon?
We got the Bears.
In Chicago.
It's going to be, who knows, you know?
We both speechless.
Yeah. We both watched, everybody watched last week's game, and we went, what?
What?
Anyway.
Well, I just sent you a text in.
Yeah, you did.
Okay,
yeah, you did.
We better leave it at that.
Okay.
And anyway, yes, of course, we're talking about the Detroit Lions. That's all I'm going to say this morning.
Well, that's right.
We want you all to sit back on this cold Sunday morning here in the Motor City and sit back and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee. As I always like to say, as you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship and small business development across the great city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, as well as across the country, because this show does air nationally via radio.com. Before I proceed with our great lineup of guests, I have a special shout out. This past Thursday evening, I was the keynote speaker at West Bloomfield High School, and I was selected over several speakers to deliver the keynote to 140 students who are being inducted, and they were inducted into the National Honor Society. So congratulations to all those students. We're very proud of you. Keep your heads held high and keep moving forward. All right, let's jump right into the conversation with our very first guest, Mr. Richard Broder, and he's a 30-year real estate veteran and founder and CEO of Broder and Saxeat Real Estate in the Motor City, and he has a long, distinguished career in the real estate industry, so a category, so we're going to spend some time chatting with him this morning. Richard, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So good to have you. And you've got 30 years of real estate?
At least 30 years. Been at it for a while.
You don't look like it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, good. Talk to us briefly, though, about Broder and Saxeat, the real estate company.
Right, so Broder and Saxeat, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary. We had a formal celebration last week, and we're focused on putting a great product out in the marketplace, a high level of service to our residents and our multifamily, providing great retail options for retailers in the city of Detroit. We work all over Michigan and other parts of the country as well, but we also have been focusing on what's going on in Detroit over the last 5 to 10 years, which is really exciting.
And first of all, let me say congratulations. 25 years in business is a long time in this industry, and clearly in this city where we've kind of gone through our ups and downs as well.
Yeah, we've been in for the long haul, and we started concentrating on downtown, midtown, New Center about 5 to 7 years ago, and it's just really exciting to see the change that has come to the city. We're thrilled to be part of something really new and exciting, and you know, it's happening in a town that I've spent my entire life in, so it's exciting to see happen again.
And that begs me my question for you. Why has it been so important for you to be involved with Detroit? And of course, certainly over the last 25 years, how have you seen the evolution of the city continue to evolve on a real estate side? Not from a city's perspective, but on the real estate side as well.
Well, the focus for many years, maybe even as long as 50 years, was in the suburbs, and the city of Detroit itself had a number of challenges, which are pretty well known. And the tide started to turn about 5 years ago. And you know, I'm a lifelong Detroiter. This is where I've grown up. This is where I'm spending my life. This is where I'm spending my professional life as well. And we just cared so deeply to make sure that we were part of the story and part of the resurgence. we're here, we're not going anywhere, and we had to be part of it.
So 25 years ago, I'm just curious, in this industry, have you seen a major consolidation of real estate firms over that 25 year, or are there still quite a few independent firms out there in the city, in the metropolitan area?
Well, in the metropolitan area, it's a great question. Nationally, there's been consolidation in the real estate industry. Detroit is still very much a local market. A lot of local entrepreneurs who are in the real estate business, not a lot of institutions in town playing around in the arena that we're in. It's family-owned, it's entrepreneurial, it's startup. It's a very localized and very sort of family oriented real estate market.
But with this revitalization that's taking place across the city, increase in investments of people coming in and buying more and more land and more property, do you sense that there are more real estate firms coming in to do business here from the outside, from outside real estate firms, or do you see more localized firms beginning to pop up?
It's a little bit of both. And so there is great interest from outside of Detroit and outside of Michigan in what's going on here. But it's also still very fertile ground for people who want to set out on their own to be their own business people, to start from scratch. It's fertile ground for them to start on their own in a place like Detroit. There's lots of opportunity.
And you've got some major developments that you've been working on even this, you know, recently over the 25 years. But let's hone in on a few of the recent ones, more the big name projects, if you will.
Sure.
What are some of those out there that people might recognize?
Right. So the one that I think people will be find most recognizable is the Scott at Brush Park. Mm-hmm. It was the very first ground-up luxury apartment building built in Detroit probably in 40 years. And so caught a lot of notoriety. It leased up well. We've got some great retailers in the building. The market really accepted what we put forth, and we didn't know that that would happen or not. We thought it would, and we're obviously very happy that the market accepted the product that we put out there. And it's really got a great reputation. It's quite exceptional. People love living there.
Is that the one by Capitol Park?
No, that's a different one. Okay. So that's the Albert.
That's the Albert.
That's the Albert at Capitol Park, a 1929 Albert Kahn building. Gorgeous bones, and we were able to turn it into a beautiful luxury apartment. We were the first new product open on Capitol Park, and Capitol Park is the little gem that we always thought it would be. And all the rest of the buildings are now done on Capitol Park.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that you mentioned those two developments, for example. There's a sense of community there, right? Oh. With those two projects you just referenced, you know, apartment living and high-rise living in a major city. How have you been able to maintain that sense of community over the years and in terms of when you develop these projects? In other words, when you go in, what's the primary mission when you kind of like buy the, or I guess develop those types of buildings?
Our whole mantra is to raise the bar on the level of service.
Yeah.
It's been very low in Detroit, and we really wanted to provide an exceptional level of service to the people living there. So we program a lot. We provide not only great physical amenities, you know, nice apartments, a nice pool deck, a nice living room, that sort of thing, but also we program social events for the residents. And we actually, we're addressing what they want, which is to be part of a community by giving them opportunities to be involved in community events.
We are talking to Richard Broder this morning, and he is the founder and CEO of Broder and Saxe Real Estate here in Detroit. And he's really talking about the evolution. You know, they just celebrated the 25th anniversary this past week, and we're just kind of having a casual conversation about the evolution of the Detroit real estate market and some of the things they're doing in downtown Detroit, which begs the question. So 10 years ago in downtown, nothing was happening.
Not much at all.
Not much. So let's be candid about it. If you look back 10 years ago, just go back to 2008. If you had to think 10 years ahead, what were you thinking back in 2008 with your business?
We were thinking that we heard about this guy that we knew of named Dan Gilbert,
really?
Who was bringing his company downtown. We were hearing a lot of talk about the at that point, the potential civic bankruptcy for the city of Detroit. And we said something's going to change, something's going to give, it's going to have to. And we started watching then and saying, we think that something's starting to get rolling a little bit. And we watched and waited till it felt like the right time for us to dive in.
Wow. And at what point did you feel that switch? So that was 2008. You heard this guy named Dan Gilbert. Said he's slowly about to go into bankruptcy, then coming out of bankruptcy. So at what point did you feel that momentum just hit that we're currently in?
you know, if you look back, it seems like it was maybe one single event, but it wasn't. It was over a period of a couple years, you just start to see more people on the street.
Mm.
You'd start to see the office buildings getting renovated. You'd start to hear rumors that people wanted to live in the city, and they didn't turn out to be rumors, that they wanted something different and urban that most people get in other cities that we hadn't been able to have in Detroit in many years.
Yeah, yeah. So we have entrepreneurs moving into the city and people wanting to start businesses in Detroit. What advice do you have for them wanting to open a business in Detroit and for those who are actually coming back into the city to establish a business or some type of firm?
Well, we know the business is there, and I'm not a scientist. I can't prove it to you, but I can tell you that it is. And one of the conversations we have with our retailers all the time is, because many of our retailers are entrepreneurs, they're mm-hmm. not national retailers, mm-hmm. is there's no business there today. What you're bringing is unique and new. Dive in, feet first, head first. Have a plan, be smart about it, be careful, but the business is there, and when you open your doors, you'll see it. And we've proven that both in Capitol Park with our retailers there who are doing extremely well, and with our retailers at the Scott at Brush Park who are also doing extremely well. And these were all, for the most part, startup entrepreneurial businesses. Mm-hmm. And they were opening their stores for the first time, and the results have been remarkable.
Yeah, and as we talk about people coming into the Detroit area, into the city, do you still feel, though, Richard, there's a sense of hesitation of a lot of people still, I know, do I really want to go downtown? Do I really want to go into the city? I'm not talking about the visit. I'm talking about establishing a business. Is there still a lot of trepidation, or do you feel the confidence level of these individuals really beginning to increase?
Well, I think there's a ton of trepidation. I think that's natural with starting any business, and then when you sort of pile on the fact that Detroit has been challenging over the years, that's out there. And what I can say now is several years into it, we have proof. We can prove to people who have some trepidation that you can open up a store, you can open the doors, put out a good product, and people will come buy your product. Mm-hmm. We can prove it.
And I'm closing in a couple of minutes or so. The headquarters, by the way, are you headquartered in downtown Detroit or are you in the suburban area? Where are you headquartered?
No, we're headquartered in downtown.
And do you have offices across the metropolitan area as well?
We don't. Our whole operation and our sister companies are all located in downtown Detroit.
And how many employees do you have?
Our companies all together, we have about 320 employees.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's outstanding. That's really impressive.
We have a great group of team members.
So how are you creating options for those up and coming business owners to present in the city? And how have your developments provided space for those individuals for new businesses?
Well, when we're planning and we're talking about what to do with a particular site, we always want to make the best possible sort of community impact.
Right.
And so that includes having some retail. So whether it's living in retail, whether it's office in retail, which we've got as well, we just want to make sure that there are mixed uses so people have more to do than just come to work and go home or just come to bed and get up and go to work.
Now, where are you located downtown?
We're on Woodward Avenue, just south of Grand Circus Park.
I got to tell you something. There is a sense of, you can just feel the energy. You can almost feel those buildings coming alive downtown. As everybody knows, I'm a native here, so I remember the heydays of the 60s and 70s, and I'm sure you do as well. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, there was that lull period. I mean, the city just rolled up at 5 o'clock. Everybody rushed out. But now when you go down there in our closing seconds, you certainly feel the energy. In closing, what is the website?
Our website is www.brodersaxy.com. And we'd love you to visit us. If you get to our website, you can also find our apartments on that website as well.
Well, Richard Broder, I want to thank you for coming again. I got to tell you, I'm very impressed by everything you're doing in 25 years. That's remarkable. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And here's to 25 more.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming in. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Marcus Lee.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That's the sound of a sale. And if you're a business owner, you can save on credit and debit card sales by switching to PNC. If we can't beat your current card processing fees, you could get a $1,000 gift card. Visit your local PNC branch or pnc.com/saveonsales to learn more. Restrictions apply, including fees used for comparison. Merchant services are provided by PNC Merchant Services and are subject to credit approval. For offer details, terms, and conditions, go to pnc.com/saveonsales or to any PNC branch. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
It's not just a home or a car. It's the 5 hours you spend in the kitchen mastering your epic wing recipe and a three-hour family road trip to the tailgate party. While other insurance companies just see them as a bundle or combo, State Farm agent Cindy Fletcher sees your home and car as the time and memories you put into them. Cindy understands what your things really mean to you and is here to help you give them the protection they deserve. Talk to State Farm agent Cindy Fletcher in Plymouth for your home and auto insurance today. You can call her at 734-459-2023.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying the conversation. You know, Thanksgiving is getting closer and closer, but we're trying to get you in the mood for it. All right. Our next guest is Mr. Paul Jacobs, and he's the Vice President, General Manager of Jacobs Media. And for over 30 years, Jacobs Media has provided programming, digital, and social media consulting to radio broadcasters. He has an extended career dating back a few years. I'm not going to say how long, but just a couple of years. Mr. Paul Jacobs, you also own Jacobs, and please extend my welcome to you to joining us in Small Talk this morning.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Talk to us about Jacobs. What is it?
You know, it's really weird. We're a couple of broadcasting guys who came up through the radio business. My brother was a program director. I came out of sales. But we've always been very interested in technology and interested in how consumers are adapting and how it intersects with media. And 10 years ago, 2 weeks ago, we celebrated our anniversary.
Congratulations.
We saw the opportunity for smartphones and mobile apps 100 days after the iPhone app store opened. And so we said, hey, let's get into this business. We didn't really know what we were doing. We knew it was going to be big. Developed our first app back in 2008, and now we've developed about 1,200 worldwide.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're one of the first people to do that. When you start to do it, do people think you were crazy? Like, explain to me this concept of a mobile app. For example, you have here, you know, exactly what is it? But way back in the day, 10 years ago, when you tried to explain it to somebody, what was their normal reaction?
Well, you should have heard my wife. I mean, she was like, what are you doing here starting a company? You got to remember, it was 2008. The economy was over a cliff. The iPhone had been out about a year. And nobody really knew what a mobile app was. But we understood that iPhones were going to become an essential part of everybody's life. I mean, people sleep with them today. And we saw mobile apps as a way of connecting brands and companies with people. And so we took a shot. We had no employees. We had a great idea, started outsourcing it. When I started hiring employees, they were in our storage room because I had nowhere to put them.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we've got 25 employees, and we're rocking.
You're rocking. So yeah. To those listening, yes, there are a few people out there who may not know what an app is. What is it?
You know, it is such a great question, and I can tell you 99% of the companies that call us about an app really don't know what it is. You know, it's like buying your first car. You don't know the questions to ask. You don't know what they are. An app is a piece of software that goes on a phone that connects a lot of information from a customer's business mm-hmm. with a consumer. So, for example, if I have downloaded an app for a shopping mall, the app can tell me the stores in the mall, can show me sales of merchandise at various stores, can help me map out how to find the shopping mall, can pin where I parked so I can find my car when it's done. So it has created this unbelievable access of content and information that a business has that they want to put in the hands of a consumer. And let's face it, mm-hmm. we sleep with our phones. So getting that app on that screen, that is just prime real estate for a marketer.
Is it kind of like having the website on your phone?
It's a little different.
Meaning the same type of information you might find on a website.
It can be. And a mistake a lot of clients make, and we've made it too, is they try to cram all the information from their website into the phone.
Mm.
When you look at the screen, it's smaller. Mm-hmm. So what you want to figure out, what is the most essential information to put on the phone? And there's certain content that really utilizes the advantage of the phone. Like, for example, mapping. You can't really do that in a website, you can see where something's located on an app. But in a mobile phone, it shows you where you are and how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, you know, ongoing information flow that can happen in a phone that can't happen in a website. So you got to be somewhat strategic about it.
What is the biggest hesitation for a business in terms of creating an app? Why don't they want to do it?
Part of it is lack of knowledge. Part of it is lack of trust. You know, they're buying a product that they've never bought before. So our approach is you're not buying a piece of software. You're buying a mobile solution. So we sit down with the client and we try to figure out, what do you need? What problem do you want to solve with this? Then we work through that. So part of it is building trust.
Mm-hmm.
We're fortunate. We've got a great portfolio of clients and, you know, that kind of helps. But at the end of the day, we have to demonstrate to a client that we're very competent at what we do. We will tell clients not to do something. If they want to spend a lot of money and we think it's a mistake, we'll tell them. Yeah, that is probably the biggest thing. They don't know the questions to ask. So we've got to work as a consultant almost.
And then on the flip side, then why does a business need an app?
Well, they need an app because, and not every business does, but I think most of them do. Because again, that phone is in the pocket or purse of just about everybody. And so the opportunity to be able to communicate with a customer or communicate in a business-to-business role. Apps are just not for retail. One of our most successful apps has been downloaded by 300 people, but it's a business that needs to connect with truck drivers and the quarry and the customer and dispatch. And so those are the right 300 people for the app. So apps can solve that problem. The other thing an app can do is a concept called push messaging, where if a user opts in, it allows the business or the company to push messages out. So this weekend we're having a sale, or you know, something new has been added you need to check out. So all of a sudden it creates this two-way communication vehicle that just doesn't exist anywhere else.
We're talking to Paul Jacobs, the Vice President and General Manager of Jacobs Media, and also you own Jake Apps as
correct.
Well, right?
Yeah, I have two jobs. I'm crazy.
Okay. I know. I can't even keep up. Hey, and as an aside, I noticed before I go on, you are 2016 inducted into the Michigan Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they ran out of people to put in.
Did you know this, Doug? Another broadcaster over another Hall of Fame?
Yeah. I followed that family for a while.
Yeah, and as we joke, people go, you know, you're in radio. Should you be on the air? And I said, have you heard my voice?
Your voice sounds fine.
Yeah.
I think you're taking over from me and Doug, over Doug to me. But anyway, congratulations for
Thank
that.
Thank you.
So as you've given me the case of why I need an app, right? So what criteria, I don't know where to start, what criteria do I need to use, and how do I select, if you will, a mobile app development company?
There's about four or five things that a company should do in choosing a mobile app developer. First of all, you want to find a company that has end-to-end services, that really is full service from design to testing to development. There's a lot that goes into it. It looks simple on the phone, but it is a complex piece of software. So you want somebody who really understands everything. And that up to and including getting the app into the App Store, making sure that it complies with Apple and Android's, you know, requirements. The second thing, there's a couple different types of developers. Some have a templated solution and they try to cram the business into that. Well, that can be a lower cost thing, and that might work for some businesses. What you really want is an app developer who's flexible, who can really tailor the solution to your needs. We really recommend that in choosing a mobile app developer, ask them for case studies. Ask them to provide you with examples of work they have done and obviously references which you want to check out. There's always internal buy-in. Again, so many businesses are buying an app for the first time. If it's a larger organization, there might be people who need to be sold through. And so we will work with our clients to make sure everybody involved with the process understands what's going on. And then finally, don't treat them as a vendor. Treat them as a partner. When you buy an app, the relationship does not end there. The requirements from the app stores change all the time. Apps need to be updated. They're very flexible. Maybe it should reflect Christmas. Maybe it should reflect certain times of the year. So you want to make sure that you have a long-term relationship with the developer, because apps live and breathe. and you don't want your customers to get bored with it.
You know, I've always wondered this, Paul. I've seen so many apps. I have all these apps on my phone as well. I just thought, you know, it's probably easy to create an app or it is complicated. So that's my naivety, if you will. So what is the process of creating an app? Is it a very extensive process to create the app? And if you're working with a client, can they give you their input as well?
Yes, it is a collaboration. You know, it starts out with what we call requirements, and that is working through the strategy of identifying what solution it needs to provide, what functionality it should have. And then we turn it back on the client, because if they want the app to feature something, where is that content coming from? You know, so for example, if it's, you know, a listing app like a Yelp, and it's got a whole list of different, let's say, restaurants, where's that data coming from? So we have to collaborate with the client on that. Then we move into design, and we'll produce many different designs. The client can look them over. We tweak it back and forth. Then we create a document called a requirements document, mm-hmm. which is really the architecture of the app. So we know how everything is linked. That is about 60% of the process, the coding. It actually takes less time than the upfront prep. But the coders are where the magic happens. I mean, they're the ones who really are able to weave these things together so they're seamless, so they're elegant, you know, and really so they're effective.
So we get that architectural document. We've agreed on things that we need and that I want to communicate and make it in terms of user friendly. So from the time that we get that document, so 60% of it is done, and the 40%, what's the time period for the last 40% to actually start developing the app to when it's actually functional?
Most of these projects take 10 to 12 weeks. So I would say 4 to 5 of that is the development. But there is one thing that we do during the development phase. We provide our clients with a provisional app. So they download a piece of software. It doesn't go through the store yet. They're able to download the app in preliminary form, share it with their friends, play with it, tweak it, test it. And that real life experience helps them better understand what they purchased. Mm-hmm. We're able to make final changes. And then again, we have an ongoing relationship. So once it's published, we can make changes as the relationship goes on.
So with the website, you pay an ongoing, monthly fee just to maintain it, to host it. Is there a similar process here?
Yes. Never buy an app and have the developer walk away.
Okay.
They created the code. They know how it works. And there's no manual that comes with these. So we do an ongoing relationship. They pay us a small monthly fee, and they get X amount of hours or X amount of services. But that's their insurance policy. And I have to tell you, every September is always gut check time in the app business, because every September, Apple comes out with their new operating system. And it's voodoo. You don't know how it's going to impact your app. So you want to have a developer who is attuned to those changes and can respond quickly when they happen. It's like Christmas, except sometimes not so good.
So, okay, I'm just curious, in our closing moments together, closing minute or so together. So 10 years ago, well, several years ago, I guess you said 10 years ago approximately.
Yeah.
So when these phones were coming out, you had the foresight to see this, right? So here we are in 2018. So let's look ahead to 2019 in 5 years, since you had the foresight to see the importance of app development. What do you see the next big idea being in the next 10 years?
Well, one of the next things that's going to happen is voice-activated apps. So right now you have to touch your screen for everything.
Yeah.
Pretty soon you're just going to be, and thank you, Alexa, soon you're just going to be able to go play stream or whatever. We have a concept we call App Everywhere. We want to make sure, apps should just not be on phones. There's smart TVs, there's Roku, Apple TV. So why shouldn't a client with the right content who has video or whatever, be in your television set at home? Alexa and Google Home have opened a whole new array of getting content to clients. And so we're working with and developing that. And then the final thing, and thank goodness we're in Detroit, we're developing for cars. So now we have the ability to get content into the dashboard and other things. So bottom line is, it's moving beyond the phone.
And I got to ask you.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that scary?
Yeah.
Remember the Jetsons years ago?
Yeah.
Did that go when you do that?
Yes. Always love that.
I know we're up against the clock, but back in the day, it was like, there's no way we're going to see this in our lifetime.
Yeah.
It's, and now look at what we're seeing.
I know. We're seeing people on our phones. It's amazing.
It's
technology.
Amazing.
Yeah, what's gone?
Well, Paul, thank you. What's your website?
Website is www.jakeapps.com. That's JACAPPS.
Paul Jacobs, we want to thank you very much for coming in and sharing the insights. Appreciate it.
Great to be here. And go Lions.
Go Lions against the Bears, I guess.
Right.
All right. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley. Hi, I'm Mark Esley, and thank you for listening to Small Talk, and thank you for your continued support. I hope you're enjoying the conversation with a great lineup of guests who continue to provide you with the best in business talk focused on entrepreneurship and small business development. Now, allow me to take a moment to talk to you about the Lee Group. TLG is a Detroit-area strategic marketing company focused on providing consulting services in the areas of strategic planning, marketing, integrated communications, and training and development. As president and founder of the Lee Group, I have years of experience helping companies develop marketing strategies to build productive relationships with consumers while delivering measurable results. And we can help your company. Interested? Please contact me and let's start a discussion about your company. For more information, please go to LeeGroupInnovation.com. That's LeeGroupInnovation.com.
No one knows the neighborhoods like The Hub. That's why Small Talk with Mark Esley is proud to partner with a newsmaker that has its pulse on what and where neighborhood investments are happening throughout Metro Detroit, as well as opportunities around the corner. Together, we are leaders in Detroit's neighborhood growth. Subscribe or visit thehubdetroit.com. That's thehubdetroit.com. And continue to listen to Small Talk with Mark Esley, Sunday mornings from 8 till 9.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying the conversation over that nice hot cup of coffee. As I always like to say, I know the Lions are struggling. But I'm going to sit back anyway. I don't know why, but I will. And watch them play the Chicago Bears this afternoon over in the Windy City. The Motor City and the Windy City will be coming together. All right, at this point in the show, you know I like to give my shout-out. So if you're sitting here in the Motor City, I'd like to give my shout-out to AM 1270 for giving me this form each and every single week to have this conversation with you. So you might be sitting back and reading your free press. Just sit back and enjoy the conversation. Or you might be listening to Small Talk with Mark Esley in your local city across the country via radio.com. And also one of our many other .coms that we have, LeeGroupInnovation.com, WWJNewsRadio.com, SoundCloud.com, and TheHubDetroit.com. And if you are, just sit back and relax and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee with your local newspaper or local and your mobile technology with our very next special guest, Ms. Shawn Palmerville-Size. And she's the executive director of the Motor City's National Heritage Area, an affiliate of the National Park Service dedicated to preserving, interpreting, and promoting the automotive heritage of the great city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. Shawn, good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
So glad to have you.
Yeah, it's good. A fine morning.
It is a fine morning. You know what? As long as it's, you know, the sun is shining, it may be overcast and cool, I'm okay with that.
And a good cup of coffee.
So let's start with the basics. The Motor City's National Heritage Organization. Exactly what is it and how did it come to be?
Well, let me define what a national heritage area is for you first. So there are 49 of them in the country. They are created by Congress, and we happen to have been created 20 years ago as the Motor City's National Heritage Area. So it's an elite group, and what a heritage area does is tells a story important to America's history. And in our case, we tell the story of how this region put the world on wheels. So it's quite an honor to be a National Heritage Area, and a lot of people don't realize, a lot of your listeners probably don't realize they are in a National Heritage Area.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's quite big.
Because, you know, a lot of times we think about the automotive industry here in Detroit, a lot of people will go to other museums, you know, like in Dearborn, and they get this story, whatever. But so kind of talk to us about the primary mission then. I mean, kind of how are you getting that message out to people about this being a heritage area, national heritage area?
Right. So our goal is to link all together these people who are telling the story of our great heritage here in Michigan. So you mentioned the Henry Ford out in Dearborn, and we have an enormous number, over 1,000 actually, that we have cataloged of auto-related museums, archives, auto-barren homes, cemeteries, roadside attractions, all kinds of things that commemorate the auto heritage of this state and that we're in the business of promoting and preserving.
Hmm.
So just to give you an idea, we have 250 wayside signs throughout our 16-county area. So 16 counties is pretty large. There's 6 million people within the heritage area, and it stretches as far west as Kalamazoo. We go up to Lansing and Flint, where all those great automotive stories are told. Dearborn, Ypsilanti. We tell the story of the Arsenal of Democracy, where during two world wars, auto production migrated to arsenal production. And we keep that story alive. And we even tell a little bit of the story in Windsor, Ontario, where there's a Henry Ford story.
So what's the benefit of being designated as a heritage area? Do we get special benefits for that? Or
we do.
We do.
First, we have the imprimatur of the National Park Service, which is one of the most beloved federal government programs. And so we have that in the state of Michigan without any money, I mean, out any land set aside. This is all in private land ownership. So we have the imprimatur. We also get a designated amount of money every year via the National Park Service. And with that money, we help organizations throughout the heritage area by giving them grants if they are doing heritage preservation or they are doing an educational program or even auto heritage tourism. They can come to us and apply for funds, for one thing. And then we have other big picture projects that are a lot of fun. Like, I'm sure you've seen those wonderful brown signs along the highway, those big brown signs with the white trim from the National Park Service. So we're going to have those in the upcoming year. We're going to have 32 of those sprinkled throughout the southeast and central region of Michigan on the highway saying, "Welcome to the Motor City's National Heritage Area." We're hoping to drive people to the website so they can start to tour all these amazing places that we have because it's in our DNA here in Michigan.
And speaking of being in our DNA here in Detroit, the Motor City in the state of Michigan, the home of the manufacturing as well. So sometimes we take it for granted. You know, I grew up here, and we just take the automotive industry for granted. I mean, you know, back when I was in high school, I told the story recently to some friends of mine. If you went to high school in those days, you got a job at the plants. It was just a given. You earned your money, you went to college, and obviously the plants are certainly the things that kind of, you know, changed because of technology. But my point is, we take it for granted. So why is it so important for our region to preserve that heritage? You know, something that we've taken for granted for so long. Why is it so important for us to preserve that heritage?
It's important because that heritage represents some of the greatest innovation this country has ever known. The design of the automobile, the speed, the way it changed our lives. So as you say, we took it for granted. Everybody would go to work in an auto plant. I worked in an auto plant. I worked at the Rouge factory for a summer.
I gave tours at the Rouge plant. And my brothers worked at the Wayne Assembly plant on Michigan Avenue and near 275.
Yep, and you hardly talk to anybody before you cross that path.
Exactly.
Everybody's got a connection to auto in Michigan. It's in our DNA. And so, you know, it's important to talk about how, especially 100 years ago, at the turn of the last century, when auto was coming alive, the innovation was just incredible. And then the jobs that came from it, and then basically the middle class because of the involvement of the United Auto Workers. Things like the $5 a day was a big deal back in the turn of the century, and people flocked here. And we had all kinds of cultures that were brand new to the area that have come to make Detroit the rich place that it is. So it's important to look at that, not only to because it's a precious heritage with incredible relics in these gorgeous cars, but also because it represents an innovation again today in the turn of the 21st century when we're looking at going to things like driverless cars or more mass transit. We need that innovation. We need that inspiration for our young people to design the next phase in transportation.
Absolutely. And we're talking to Shawn Palmerville Size, and she is the executive director of the Motor City's National Heritage Area, which is an affiliate of the National Park Service. As we talk about the organization. You just had a major celebration this past week, is that right?
Yes, yes, we did. We're 20 years old.
20 years old, congratulations.
Thank you.
Nice celebration. It turned out just fine, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had a nice big gala at the Packard Proving Grounds in Shelby Township. That's a wonderful place for people to go to now, and that's a prime example of the kind of work we do. So we have provided some grants to them, and they've gotten other grants to preserve the buildings that they have there at the Proving Grounds, mm-hmm. which were built by Albert Kahn, the great architect of so many of the factories here in the Detroit region. And so Packard Proving Grounds has this gorgeous collection of Packards, old, beautiful Packards, and it was a great place to have a sort of a look back, a sentimental look back, and talk about the people who were impassioned to begin a heritage area. You asked me earlier what starts them, and it's really just a group of interested people who know they've got a great story to tell, bringing together a whole bunch of other people and eventually, you know, making their way to this thing called a National Heritage Area within the National Park Service. So we had help 20 years ago with Congressman John Dingell. Mm-hmm. We had help 20 years ago with Senator Carl Levin to get the National Heritage Area Pact, Representative Joe Nolenberg all those years ago. So it takes a village to make it happen. There were 300 community meetings about why we should preserve our auto heritage and exactly how to do it.
And in that 20-year period, what are a couple of the most significant accomplishments, maybe your top two or three in that 20-year period, the heritage has really accomplished?
So I would encourage your listeners, if they haven't been, to go to the Ford Model T Piquette plant, which is in Detroit.
In Detroit.
Sure. So this is where Henry Ford built cars before the assembly line. And of course, we've been able to help with the Highland Park plant, too, which is where the first assembly line was
Piquette,
built.
Was that, that's downtown, isn't it?
It's downtown.
And there's a plaque. On
yes.
The, yeah, I've seen that.
Yes, it's a National Historic Landmark.
Is that where the Model T used to come off?
That was it. That's
oh,
the place.
God.
That was where it was invented.
Come on, here it comes. Here it comes. Go ahead.
No. Mr. History.
Well, you know what? See, you know where Mr. History gets it from?
Why?
It's where he parks.
Right.
And he walks to Ford Field.
Ah.
And he looks at the
oh,
side
yeah.
of the building.
There you
uh-huh.
go.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
You don't always get your history from the history books.
That's right.
Detroit's full of the history.
That is
anywhere you look.
That is outstanding. And speaking real quick of Albert Kahn, mm-hmm. he's also designed many of the famous buildings in Detroit. You know,
yes.
yeah, he's a legendary architect. He did the Fisher Building and
the Packard plant,
amongst other things. Mm-hmm. Outstanding. So, what other events do you have? What other events do you have upcoming to observe the 20th anniversary?
So, Michigan Auto Heritage Day is coming. It's December 6th at the state capitol, and during that time, the governor and the legislature honor
this will be
the auto heritage.
The existing governor,
yes.
not the governor. Elect, right?
Yes, the lame ducks
okay.
will be all assembled there to, honor our auto heritage themselves. And, you know, we do this in partnership with the Auto Caucus, the Legislative Auto Caucus, which started just 4 years ago. So that's a partnership we have with them at the legislature, and we honor people who have done an outstanding job with an award in excellence for heritage, tourism, education, and preservation.
This is very cool. This is I never knew
yeah.
that we had all this here and the heritage designation. So this is truly educational for me. Did you know this?
No.
It's incredibly
no?
rich.
No,
you
no,
know,
it's
we brought
interesting stuff.
We brought you a passport book,
okay.
and you can find out all about the 29 actually places throughout the heritage area, and you can get your passport stamped just like the National Park Service
so
does.
So you get it stamped, you get like special discounts or just?
You do.
Really?
You do. Huh. If you become a member, you do.
Okay.
So we are having a membership drive as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that opens up this month, and we take memberships to support it from the community, support all the work that we're doing, and you get the opportunity to get discounts at our member organizations.
Well, in our closing 30 seconds or so, then talk to us about the support that you need. I mean, give us a website that people can visit. What type of support are you looking for?
It's www.motorcities.org, and just click on the button that says support and join us as a member in preserving and promoting our unique auto heritage.
And can people volunteer their time as well?
Absolutely. We'd love to hear your story okay. about your involvement in auto.
Well, Sean Palmerville Size, I want to thank you for educating me this morning on an area that I'm from that I didn't know we had all this history associated with.
My pleasure.
Such a great
Mark.
Story. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Marcus Lee.
Tax reform has many businesses wondering what's the best entity form to conduct business: C-Corp, S-Corp, or partnership? It's an important question, and the new tax laws offer an important opportunity to review your tax strategy. Factors include tax rates, what kind of business you have, if you have international operations, or planning an exit. UHY is uniquely qualified to provide this in-depth analysis. Call them at 586-254-1040.
It's not just a home or a car. It's the 5 hours you spend in the kitchen mastering your epic wing recipe and a 3-hour family road trip to the tailgate party. While other insurance companies just see them as a bundle or combo, State Farm agent Cindy Fletcher sees your home and car as the time and memories you put into them. Cindy understands what your things really mean to you and is here to help you give them the protection they deserve. Talk to State Farm agent Cindy Fletcher in Plymouth for your home and auto insurance today. You can call her at 734-459-2023.
Tooth Fairy here with a message for all you moms-to-be. Are you brushing, flossing, and seeing the dentist before and during your pregnancy? I hope so, because you can pass the germs from untreated cavities to your infant. Make that date with your dentist today. Oops, got a date with a molar.
Learn more at michigan.gov/oral health. Sponsored by the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, with funding provided by Delta Dental.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esky. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying this nice, cool Sunday morning in the Motor City. Yes, we are in the middle part of November. Oh, man, these days are flying by. And, you know, Thanksgiving is technically next week. Whoa, think about that for a second. Doke.
Yeah,
next
I know.
Week.
I know.
You know, well, no comment on that.
I know where you were going.
You know where I was going, so I'm going to leave it alone. All right, our very next special guest, we have Mrs. Jennifer Stevens, and she serves as the Child Welfare Director over with Samaritas and over the Bay and Mid-Regions of Samaritas, and she's earned her bachelor's of degree from Wayne State University and a master's from the Great Eastern Michigan University. And Ms. Kelly Dobner, she joined Samaritas leadership team in 2017 as the Chief Advancement Officer. No, I would have thought she just joined 20 days ago. How's that? Did I clean that one up okay? Good morning, and thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. All right, so I'm going to just throw out the very basic question. Either one of you want to answer the question, please tell us about Samaritas.
Absolutely. We're honored to have
Kelly
the opportunity.
Talking,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. This is Kelly. Right. We're excited to have this opportunity. Samaritas has been serving the state of Michigan for 85 years now. We started as Lutheran Social Services of Michigan and recently went through a name change to better serve or explain how we serve in 2016. So in Samaritas, we are the largest private foster care and adoption organization in the state. We also offer New American services for our refugees for the last several decades. And we offer services for persons with disabilities as well as senior care.
Yeah. And Jennifer, in your role as a child welfare director, what are you primarily focused on?
So my focus is primarily on foster care services. So we're working with those youth who are not able to remain in their biological family or their family of origin at the time. And so our goal is to reunify them with their families. And if we're not able to do that, we find other alternate plans for them for permanency.
And then we're talking about foster care. So share with us the importance of independent living homes for teens in that situation.
Yeah, so a lot of the youth that are in foster care are teenagers. And, you know, people love working with those young children. The teens are a little bit more of a challenge, but they're so important to us because they are the ones that are going into the community soon and starting to be a part of our communities with work and contributing back to those communities. So we need to prepare them for that. We need to make sure they are successful in doing that. So our independent living homes help those youth provide support, security, while they're learning life skills to prepare them for that future.
And part of that, I'm sure, will be mentorship programs. You probably have mentoring services available. Talk to us about the importance and the role of mentoring these young people in that type of environment.
Yeah, so we have staff that prepare them with life skills coaching. And we also have volunteers that help mentor these youth. And there's so many things that the mentors do with the youth. They help them to plan meals, which means going to the grocery store, knowing what to buy to prepare a full, healthy, nutritious meal, and then how to prepare those meals, how to budget their money so they have the money available to buy the essentials. We teach them how to do laundry and house cleaning and how to obtain a job and how to maintain that job. So a lot, anything that we need to know.
Okay. And Kelly, in your role as the Chief Advancement Officer, exactly what does that mean, Chief Advancement Officer?
We focus on engaging the community in the mission work that we do. So through fundraising, volunteerism, communications, you name it. We get to tell the great stories that Jennifer and her team on the program side make possible for our kids every day.
And how many homes do you have statewide?
So we have 9 ILP homes, which is the Independent Living Plus, that houses our youth, across the state. So they're anywhere from Southfield here in Southfield all the way out to Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo and everywhere in between.
So it's basically across the entire state of Michigan.
Yes.
From the southeast Michigan all the way up to,
to the west side, yep.
Okay, I didn't know that. And so when you talk about, either one for the answer the question about teens, how many teens are typically housed in one of these locations?
So currently in our 9 homes, we have an overall capacity of 49 youth.
Okay.
But each home varies depending on size. They all have their own bedroom. So on average, I would say 5 to 6 youth are in the home.
Okay. So if I'm listening, Kelly, and they got an opportunity to sell me on the opportunity to come in and engage in the organization, give me that pitch. What would you tell me?
Absolutely. Well, we'll start big. So we need homes for these youth. That is one of the biggest costs in operating these life-changing programs, is to be able to have the real estate to be able to open these homes, a home that has 6 bedrooms that we can convert into this. There's a huge way. Another way is to donate supplies from toiletries and linens to small house appliances, anything that these kids need to learn those life skills in these homes where they're living. And then they move on, as Jennifer was describing. They're more transitional housing, until they can find permanent housing. They need starter kits. And so that's a really fun way for social groups to get together, corporate giving in that way, putting together those kits. So these kids are starting in their own apartment. We're talking tiny homes. Wherever they go next to start their life, they need a leg up, something that their parents or our parents would provide for us in a starter kit is a really fun way to help them get on their way.
And Jennifer, back over to you. She's mentioned they're looking for, eventually, the goal, I guess, is to get them permanent homes. Is that right? So how long are they typically in an independent living area, independent living facility before they get a permanent home?
For the Independent Living Plus program, it's up to 1 year.
1 year.
Yeah, and then they can transition into an independent living program, which is outside of that group home setting, and in an individual home. They can be in a dormitory, they could have their own apartment, and that's what Kelly was talking about. We need to be able to provide them the items that they'll need to be successful in that home environment that they have.
What types of backgrounds, generally speaking, do they come from? They were talking about the teens.
So it's a variety. We see all kinds of things. Currently, a lot of the youth that are coming into care because their parents are struggling with issues with substance abuse. And opiates is on the rise. And that's a huge issue that we're seeing right now. But there's all kinds. It could be domestic violence. It could be mental health issues. Could be physical abuse. So there's a lot of reasons that the children come in.
This is a very important conversation. We're going into the holiday season, and we have a lot of people certainly challenged this time of the year. And you mentioned different types of situations that could drive people to do certain things. You know, just let's just be candid about it. And we're talking to Ms. Jennifer Stevens. She is the Child Welfare Director for the Bay and Mid-Regions of Samaritas. And we're also talking to Kelly Dobner, and she is the Chief Advancement Officer also for Samaritas. And we're talking about a very important issue here. And we're talking about independent living homes for teens in foster care. So when we talk about these homes, are there any plans to expand, build more across the state of Michigan, across Metro Detroit? What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, we at Samaritas feel that this is such an important program that we need to continue to expand. We can't stay stagnant with the 9 homes that we currently have. So we definitely will be looking at opening homes in 2019. As you said, Mark, I am the director over the Mid and Bay areas. And
that's
Mid-Michigan. Mid-Michigan and Bay areas. And so it's all basically Central Michigan. And I am definitely have that planned for 2019 to at least open homes in those areas.
So I'm just curious then, in terms of, you know, Metropolitan Detroit is primarily the population center for the state of Michigan. Is there a preponderance towards the issues or challenges in Detroit, the metro area, relative to the rest of the state, or is it pretty evenly distributed across the entire state?
There's just a difference. There's a difference depending on the areas. Like I said, I talked about the opiate crisis. In different areas, we see that being much more prominent than other areas. Some of the areas that I work in that have that issue are Jackson and Flint. We've seen a lot of youth coming into care because of opiate issues there. And we do see some in all the other areas, too, but you know, different areas have different needs.
What are some of the factors that are preventing these young people to really learn just the basic preparation skills as they think about the next phase of their life? What are some of the challenges that they have to overcome? In other words, what are some of the critical factors keeping them from achieving maximum productivity, if you will?
Right, right. So these youth oftentimes are coming in from an unstable environment. They have sometimes bounced around from home to home in their foster care, in the time that they've been in foster care. They've have challenges with dealing with the trauma that they experienced in their original home, and maybe even the trauma of experiencing different homes, moving from home to home. So there's a lot of instability. They don't understand. They also don't look at the future, right? So they're trying to live day to day. So we have to help them to think about what they need to do for their future and understand that they have a future.
Yeah. And Kelly, back over to you. We think about their future and we think about your role as the advancement officer. Do you see the demand increasing in terms of, one, the services, number one, and then number two, in terms of overall donations of people contributing over the last couple of years? Is it flat? Is it increased? And we know the economy, in theory at least, is improving.
Right.
Do we see that improvement also? Do we see an improvement for the organization as well in terms of donations, or is it basically flat?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. It's not hard to say. I'll say it. I'm going to say it. The economy is doing well. We're seeing a lot more corporate involvement because of that. From an individual standpoint, individual giving, we're seeing that go down a little bit as a trend. I think a lot of it has to do with the new tax laws. There's a new threshold where you can't write anything off if you're filing singly and you don't donate more than $12,000 a year, $24,000 if you're filing jointly. That directly impacts individual giving from that standpoint. What we are seeing significantly in increased numbers is the need for volunteerism. People want today, particularly the young donors, they want to be able to give to an organization that they can give their time first, understand the mission, experience it firsthand, make a difference, and then the wallet's open after that. But it's a shift, and it's something that we really have to accommodate, and we certainly are at Samaritas in different ways, whether it's beautifying these homes in a group project or mentoring or whatever it may be. We're providing those engagement opportunities.
And I'm sure
first.
There's a cost to build a home or to open a home. What is that? Can you share that information? Is it significant? Is it kind of minimal?
It really depends. You know, a lot of times, if we can get it from a donated property, you know, in real estate, that's a game changer in what we're able to do and these lives that we're able to impact.
Okay. And Jennifer, I'll give you the closing word here. If people want more information, a website they can go to?
Yeah. So our website is samaritas.org. And Samaritas is Samaritas. org, and you can go on there and find all the information you need on how to donate, how to volunteer, and how to just connect with us.
Yeah, I mean, I got to tell you, very interesting conversation. Thank you very much for coming in and sharing what is a very important organization, and particularly as I referenced earlier, we're going through that time of need, this time of the year, holiday season, and people are going to be challenged in a lot of different ways. They're always challenged throughout the entire course of the year, but like you said, if you have an opportunity to donate or get engaged, please go to the website and get more information. Thank you both for coming on.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. That's Ms. Jennifer Stevens and also Kelly Dobner, and they're both from Samaritas. All right. Well, Doc, you all right over there?
I'm all right here.
You gonna give me some hot tea?
Yeah, I'm good. still trying to feel my feet.
I know that's right. Well, you're still suffering from yesterday's game, and exactly. In terms of the weather.
That's right.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of which, go out and make it a great day.
You do the same.
Absolutely. I guess at 1 o'clock, you know what I'll be doing.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Yeah.
All right. We all want you to go out and make it a great day, make it a great week, and we will check you out next week on Small Talk with Mark Esley. Hesitantly, I'm going to say in closing, go Lions.
Engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.